Perfect. Thank you. And that's how we manage and avert disasters, right? All right. Again, my name is Venkat. This is Damien Andre. Like I mentioned, this is not a product pitch. Today, we're going to be talking about what are the best practices, challenges, pitfalls in getting to the cloud, right? We will be using some Commvault screenshots, certain UX, so that we can do a show and tell on how you can use it. But there's certainly no means to pitch a product, right? In general, we're hoping the takeaways from this day-to-day for you would be that you'll be thinking about how to plan your movement to cloud, what moves to cloud, when it does, what are the challenges in getting to the cloud, how you can avoid some of the disasters that sometimes happen, and how you can make use of the cloud in a way that makes most sense to your organization. With that, I'm going to give Damien for a quick intro.
Hey everyone, my name is Damien Andre. I work at Commvault as a product manager. So I work in the cloud business unit and look at things like disaster recovery and virtual machine backup and protection.
Let's try that again. So my name is Damien Andre. I work at Commvault as a product manager in the cloud business unit. So I deal with all things virtual, VMware, Hyper-V, Rev, Acropolis, a whole bunch of other platforms. But today we're here to talk about disaster recovery as it pertains to Azure. So good to be here, and thanks everyone for showing up.
Thanks. We want to get to your mic, so you don't have to share. We like sharing, but not enough. All right, let's get moving. So Commvault and why disaster recovery, right? Disaster recovery is becoming, if not already, is something that everybody that's interested in data is looking into, right? How many of you here are backup administrators or deal with data or are tasked with protecting data? That's a good chunk. I think we have the relevant audience here. Awesome, right? Let's skip ahead. Why DR, right? Gartner tells us 90% of all the workloads that have need for DR will be running in the cloud by 2020, right? Commvault has a history of managing data, as you know. By the way, how many of you know Commvault here? Wow. I hope there are a lot of customers and partners who use Commvault here. Awesome. Great. So Commvault, with a lot of experience over the last 2 decades nearly, know the importance of data. And what we've been observing as a trend, just within the last year, there's a 93% increase in data that moves to the cloud. That's phenomenal. Think about it. A company like Commvault of its size, who we are tasked with protecting data, we are seeing this trend happening. The trend is here. It's moving fast. And the question is, which workloads move first, which move later, what are the best practices in moving those workloads? That's the key, right? Microsoft's own run rate of Azure is like $8 billion run rate for the cloud business, right? It's growing. We have AWS, we have Google, we have so many other cloud providers, Oracle stepping in. So the trend is here to stay. And thinking about workloads that are tier one, tier two, tier three, what we've been observing is tier two, tier three workloads are more likely the first ones to make to the cloud. Even amongst them, about 41%, as you can see, will be running in the public cloud in the next 5 years. That's a lot of workloads that are now leaving the private data center into possible hybrid and public cloud. So what is our strategy in order to manage such workloads and provide business continuity when this happens? That's what we're going to talk about. Let me go to the next slide here. A little bit about Commvault. My colleague here says, cut it short because people know Commvault. I am going to do it because I saw a lot of hands go up. Commvault is the leader in the business. Gartner has been selecting us the leader for 6 years in a row in the backup and recovery software quadrant. Right? Commvault has 98% customer satisfaction for how we work with customers. And we work with a variety of platforms. Right? Commvault is, in a way, agnostic to platforms. Right? Hypervisor platforms, name it, we'll support it. Cloud platforms, name it, we'll support it. Storage devices, name it, we'll support it. Right?
I think they get the point.
Good point.
Move on.
I'm going to take your advice and skip this slide as well after maybe quick pitch. All right. So
you've got 30 seconds.
30 seconds it is. See, Commvault has been built ground up, right, from as a single platform. The key is don't have to use multiple tools to manage your data across private, public, hybrid clouds. There's one platform, one code base that seamlessly manages your data and helps you manage all your endpoints. And 30 seconds, that is it.
Yes.
Good. Let's talk about a mission here today, right? So a lot of you here, I noticed the hands went up because you're protecting data, right? You manage data, you care about data. So managing data as much as is important may not sound like a glamorous role outside this room, right? We wanted to kind of twist it a little bit, right? It is a glamorous role if you think about it. Microsoft, for example, opened their keynote saying data is the powerful strategic asset that organizations have come to depend on. Commonwealth tagline has been that for decades now, right? Outside of people, which are the first, you know, important thing about any corporation or any company, people come first. Data immediately comes next. Data about people, data about company, data about you know, customers. So protecting data by no means is a task that is a normal task, right? We're going to call all of you as heroes here because that's what it is. Protecting data that matters means you are at a point thinking about this as preventing disasters from happening, protecting your end users' data, preventing the stock price to be from tanking. We've been seeing hacking all over, right? We've been seeing data that's getting, you know, ransomware hitting corporations, data loss because of DR events. All of that tells us that protecting data means there is a level of heroic work required by individuals in this room and people in this business in order to provide the organization with the continuity they expect. Today, we're going to kind of take that persona. So we have a lot of heroes here, right? And we're going to see how heroes who are protecting data can become superheroes, just for fun, right? So that it's not too much of a boring presentation. All right. That's the trend. If you're a superhero who's protecting data, you not only protect data, you leverage the cloud because it provides you a certain set of advantages, drives down cost, gives you more durability, and you have some secret weapons. We'll talk about the secret weapons, right? That's the persona we're going to talk about. And the agenda. So before we take on this particular journey of taking heroes through the journey of becoming superheroes, some of you already are superheroes. Look around. You may not recognize them. They're not wearing their cape. But I'm just going to go out there and say, what does it take to get to this journey? Right? We'll talk about three things specifically. We'll understand how to get data into the cloud in a way that's meaningful and factoring in the challenges. We'll talk about how do we evaluate those challenges and how do we manage and navigate around them. And how do we avoid pitfalls? There are a lot of pitfalls. You probably have seen there is sometimes journey gets faster. You send too much data to the cloud. There's issues. Sometimes you adopt it too late. A lot of pitfalls in adopting cloud. We'll talk about that. In specific areas of how we're going to talk about it, we're going to talk about in four constructs down there. How do we get data into the cloud? How do we recover workloads in the cloud in the event of a disaster event? How do we protect the data once it's in the cloud? And last but not least, how do we achieve that continuity? How, as superheroes, you're not only averting disasters, but you're, in a way, disaster-proof. How do you be ready before when the disaster hits you, right? Those are the four constructs using which we'll be talking. So without much ado, I'm going to skip a little bit here. Data management has a whole bunch of challenges. As backup admins here, as people who deal with data, constantly you get asked about new SLAs. The tier one workloads, they are lucky, aren't they? They get all the love, they get the budget, they get the tools. So you have a way to manage the tier one workloads. But what we have observed is tier two and tier three workloads, the budgets for managing them or providing the level of SLA aren't growing, but the pressure and the need of providing that kind of SLA are growing by the day. So it's a huge challenge to accommodate SLAs that are shrinking while trying to provide that with existing tools. Then data center consolidations keeps happening. A lot of customers have told us that they're shutting down some of their private data centers. They're shutting down their back office. They're trying to consolidate. That puts immense pressure on the workloads that are running there. So you, as a person who provides that continuity, now has to manage that kind of consolidation. Traditional DR supports tier one workloads, like I said, right? And you can't extend that easily. You're not going to go and argue for a DR SLA for tier two and tier three and ask for budget to get them in the same league of tier one. So traditional DR may not extend or apply to the tier two and tier three workloads. The budget we spoke about. challenges, workload portability. When you move from one platform to another platform, when you leave the constructs of a private data center to a shared data center to a public data center, your workloads now are already wrapping up all the data you care about. How do you transform that workload? Keeping in mind that the workload needs to be active on the other side, that presents a set of challenges. Because as you can see, not all hypervisors are same. You have VMDK files, and you're trying to go into Hyper-V. Now you have to convert it inline. You want to go to Azure or to AWS. You have to do some conversion. So workload portability has to be part of how you think about getting ready to move to the cloud. The risk of vendor lock-in, this is real. I will quote an example later, but we've seen cloud providers that end up trying the cloud and bailing out. There's a specific company, Nervonix, I'll quote them. They gave 15 days to their customers because they're shutting down their cloud business. September 2013. That's when they announced, our customers, sorry, we are filing for Chapter 11. So you got 15 days. Please get your data out. So what happens in those kind of contexts? A cloud provider getting a data in a format that you may not be able to take out, that matters a lot. A particular hypervisor provider that locks your data down in a particular format that's not changeable, that matters a lot. So avoiding the risk of vendor lock-in is critical because superheroes don't sleep and situations change. You still have to provide that continuity, right? So keep in mind workload automation, workload portability, and automation, right? When you're trying to move up two workloads, yeah, you can spend over a weekend, do it. You're trying to move 20 workloads, now we're talking about having to automate, having the ability to script it, having the ability to validate it. So you need powerful automation tools when it comes to porting your workloads over. You need some flexible tools there. So evaluate that, think of those scenarios before you try to solve the challenge. Utility models, right? So cloud is a great utility. And when you move to the cloud, along with that comes the next question from your CIO or the guy who writes a check for the budget. How much is it going to cost me? So how do you factor in how much it's going to cost you when you have workloads that keep growing and the SLAs are changing? So you want to think about ability to predict some of this. Then think about dormant compute. That's a keyword we'll be using a lot today, because getting the data to the cloud is one part, but if you keep it running there, it's going to cost a lot of money, right? So what we term this as dormant compute is, sometimes you may just want to get your tier two and tier three workloads into the cloud, shut them down, keep them safe, and activate them only when you really, really need it. Think if I recollect an example, a typical EC2 instance, for example, running 24/7, 365 days a year. Anybody has experience using it? Any guesses on how much it's going to cost to run an instance 24/7 in AWS? It's about $30,000 per year. If you attach a storage service to it and protect it and keep it running 24/7, $30,000 to run that workload, probably a M4 extra large. That's typical for a tier two workload. So it's a lot of cost. So you want to think about dormant compute and use the cloud only when you really need to for workloads that may not require 24/7. All right. Let's talk about some solutions, right? When backing up or archiving to cloud, you want to keep in a heterogeneous environment that you want to be supporting. You want to use cloud as a secondary storage or primary storage, depends on your use case. Consider both the scenarios. Dedupe, this is a keyword, right? So we've seen customers who have adopted great dedupe technologies and reduced their footprint of the data without compromising their ability to provide continuity by 90%. So when you send data over to the cloud, without deduping, if you're going to send it, it does two things. First, it costs you a lot more to protect the data you want. Second, the amount of budget you have on cloud is finite in some way. Cloud may be infinite, but your budget is finite. So you're now taking calls on how much data I'm going to protect. But if you dedupe it carefully with 1 to 10 ratio, now you have more space, more budget to use for additional workloads that needs protection. So dedupe must be factored in when you're thinking about backing up to the cloud. When extending data center to the cloud, you want to validate stuff before you extend the data center. You want to be able to see whether my machine comes back up. Can I validate it? Can I run my workload and provide my service, and then I shut it down, right? You want to validate that before you say, yeah, I've gone to the cloud. And think of integration. Microsoft does a great job with tools like OMS, SCOM. So think of tools that will integrate into those tools so that you can manage your workloads with the cliche term, single pane of glass. If you want to do that, you want integration automation from the get-go. And before heading to those clouds, this is another thing we see all the time. Spend some time, we urge folks to spend some time to classify your data. Not all data is equal. Classify your data, prioritize it, get data that only needs to go to the cloud. Encrypt it so that you have security that you can continue to deliver. And have an exit strategy. Recall the example I gave on Nervonix. Have an exit strategy before you get in, because that's important to either provide continuity in case of a provider or two going down, or simply because cost dynamics. There is a seemingly a price war that's happening with cloud, right? We've been observing it. So if there is a price advantage to moving from one cloud to another cloud, think about having an exit plan. If not, you'll be looking at bills that are higher while you could have adopted the other option, right? And think of solutions like Commvault. Again, it's not a product pitch, but think about solutions that incorporate all your workloads. It's a heterogeneous workloads. How many of you here have both Windows and Linux in your organization? It's pretty much everybody here, almost, right? Think of tools that natively manage Linux, Windows workloads. Think of tools that will natively work with Microsoft servers like Exchange Server, SQL Server. Think of tape backups. That matters a lot. When you think about this, also think about the remote office and ability to pull data out of there because of bandwidth issues. So factor all of this in as part of how you will evaluate your challenge. This is not a full playbook. We're happy to talk and give you a full playbook on what all checkpoints you should do before you evaluate. But these are certainly big ticket items.
Thank God. There's a guy in the corner that's asleep. So would you like to move it along? I think they know all this.
All right. How do you wake him up? Xbox.
Tell him how to be a superhero. Win an Xbox.
It's a good one. All right. So think of pitfalls, right? I'll quickly move the slide. Listen to my colleague here. There is a limited breadth of cloud support that's available that also kind of locks down your data. So think of those pitfalls. And a couple of things about cross-platform recovery. Sometimes just being able to recover from one platform to another is not important. Being able to recover it in a timely fashion, that's important. So think of those pitfalls as well. Let's move along. I'm going to go to these four constructs, remember. How do we get data to the cloud? How do we recover in the cloud? How do we back up that data and protect it? And how do we do DR? So I'm gone to the four constructs now. Again, all of this is the path to the superhero ship, right? Getting data to the cloud. So think of tape replacement, right? A lot of the low-hanging fruits is in tape replacement. We have seen providers offer support that works with all your hypervisors, but tape is a key factor because your tier two workloads, when you archive them off the tape, when you have long-term retention needs, think of those needs, right? Think about a combined local backup with archiving certain data port to Azure or your cloud preferred cloud provider. And incremental forever, that's a good strategy as well, right? Once you move your workloads using offline mechanisms or other mechanisms, using incremental forever is a great way to use the limited bandwidth that you have over WAN. And data portability is another key. Next, storage class selection, right? We see vendors coming up with offering pretty much every quarter. There's a new offer out there. For example, Azure Cool Storage, Azure Archive, Amazon, Google Inline, Nearline Storage. So many varieties of storage. Match them up with your data needs. Think about ingress and egress costs. Think about recall thresholds. Certain providers have recall threshold. Beyond a certain amount of recalls, you're now going to see humongous bills. Factor those in before you do that. And be very aware of the short-term and versus long-term needs. Sometimes compliance data may not be recalled as much. So categorize your data and have a policy in place, saying in case of a recall situation, if my accounting department wants a particular file from four financial quarters, back from four financial quarters, is that happening often? Do I need to factor those kind of policies? Have a policy in place that says, these are my retrieval policies. Then match them up with the provider that has those options. Because there is definitely a price war. There is also new offerings that keep coming up. Right? Storage class selection and ensuring the right fit is a key. This slide will be easy. This is about bandwidth. So I'm just going to take a specific example. To send about 100 terabytes of data over a 10 gig connection, which is the best you're going to get, it's going to take about a day. So for a 10 gig, 100 terabytes of data, right? So factor in such bandwidth challenges. Your journey to the cloud could be limited if you start with a ton of data and take an approach of sending it over the wire. So the next option simply is, how do we send so much data to get started? Almost all vendors provide abilities to send a lot of data. In this case, I have a eye chart there, so I'll talk about it. Amazon does a great job with Snowball, right? You could send a lot of petabytes of data, load them up, encrypt them, have a custody chain end to end, and send it over to AWS, and they will load it up, right? The SLA for sending this data and activating it on the other side varies between vendors, but that's a good way to send a lot of data. Azure, for example, provides Azure Import Export. Similar pattern, you may not be getting a custom hardware from Azure, but the terminology is the same. You want to load your data, encrypt it, have a key, ensure that end-to-end custody remains. Azure, on the other hand, will ingest this data into their cloud and make it available. So consider sending a lot of data when you have it over these kind of available technologies as opposed to sending it over the wire, which might be a non-starter in some case. All right. Now, let's talk about getting data to the cloud. It's going to be the interesting part, right? Damien here is going to do a quick demo. I'm going to set it up for him. What does it take to get data to the cloud? And what happens when you have, let's say, a critical application, let's say a payroll application, right? You are superheroes, not just to your customers, also to your fellow employees. So payroll, I would presume, is a good database to protect, right? So Damien has a demo. Take it away.
Absolutely. All right. So we're going to jump into a bit of a demo here. It's pre-recorded because I don't know if you guys have seen, but the demos haven't been going particularly well on the show floor. So I cheated a little bit, but here's one I prepared earlier. So we're going to talk a little bit about how to actually get data into the cloud. For those that haven't used the Microsoft Azure console, we're going to walk through a little bit of what I need to configure here before I start configuring Commvault, give you a bit of an idea of what you need to go through. So let's start with that. So the first thing I need to do is add a storage account, which I've logged in. Not a whole bunch of information I need to select here, but I need to choose a name, and I need to choose a deployment model. Now, Azure offers two different deployment models. We support both of them, so whichever one you're using right now, you're good to go. Next thing I need to select is a resource group. I already have one created here. In this case, I've called it Sales Corp, and that's kind of the company that I'm representing here. So I'm working at Sales Corp, and I'm tired of sending things to the mountain, so I want to ship my data off to Azure. Right, to the magic of editing, that happened very quickly. Just saying. All right, so next thing I need to do is to create a container in my storage account. So let's go ahead and do that. All right, so pretty simple to do. Click on containers, gonna add a new blob storage service. All I really need to do is give it a name and choose the access type. I'm gonna leave it as private because I don't really want anyone else to access my data. Probably not advised, and I call it Commvault Backup. Finally, the last thing I need to do is get access to this container that I've created. So I need to be able to tell Commvault, hey, this is the container you need to write to, but you know, I need to authenticate. So I'm going to create a key here and copy that. All right, quick interface demo for those that don't know Commvault. So I think there was about, 40% of you. So this is our primary interface. Client computers over here are things we want to protect. So these are hypervisors or physical machines or applications. Libraries are storage targets, so these could be a cloud storage target, disk, tape, NAS, SAN, pretty much anything you can write to. We did optical media at one point, but don't worry about that. Policies, so these are rules that define how things should be, how long I need to collect or keep my data for, where I want to ship them to, how many copies, long-term retention, all that kind of stuff. So they'll all work together in this demo. All right, so I'm going to create a new cloud storage library. I'll just call it Azure Backup. And you'll see from the drop-down menu, we support a ton of different storage vendors, including anything that's S3 compatible. But today, we're going to show you Azure. Choose my Meteor agent, which is the server that's actually going to be lifting the data up to Azure. And I'm going to put in all the information I collected before, which includes my access key and my container that I created before. All right, pretty simple. So now I'm actually connected to Azure. That's all I needed to do. The next thing I need to do is edit my policy. I've got backups going locally, but I need to ship these jobs that I'm creating to Azure. So there's a couple of ways you can do it. You can either send your data directly there, or I'm going to copy what I already have, which is what I'm going to do in this case. I can be very selective. I can say only certain types of data I need to ship there, but in this case, I'm going to select everything. So I'm creating a new copy of my data. I'll give it a name. I need to choose where it's going to go, a location. So remember, I created that cloud storage library, so Azure Backups, Meteor agent that's going to shift the data. I'm going to enable deduplication. And finally, I'm going to set my retention for 60 days. All right, so I've done two pieces of the puzzle here. I've set up my connection to Azure. I've told my backup policy that I want to send stuff to Azure. And now all I've got to do is run that job, right? And I've got to make that happen. So that's a simple case of, in our interface, saying run an auxiliary copy job. So based on the rules that are defined in the policy, we'll select all the right backups, everything you want to associate with that policy, and we'll start shifting it off. So let's have a quick look of what we're doing here. So we've got backups already stored. My critical applications are running on my SAN or NAS or whatever I have on target. It's fully deduplicated. I'm sending it over object storage directly to Azure Blob Storage. Sending it over HTTPS through Azure Blob Storage, and I don't need any infrastructure running in Azure. I can send it directly there. So that's the first part of the demo, and that's the easy part, right? Getting data in there. And we're going to talk a little bit about what you can do with it once it's there.
Sure. Thanks, Damien. So wrapping that up, we just got data into the cloud, right? That was a quick example of how you can get your payroll database into the cloud and have a copy there. Remember the first rule we said. Nothing should be running in the cloud unless it really have to, because you're going to get a sticker shock, right? You want to send the data over there to the cloud and start protecting it and be ready to recover it. Now, let's take an example, right? If you have, data that's already staged, right, and is ready, having the right provisioning tools, having the playbook in hand so that you can activate the data is as critical as having sent the data in there. So keep the data there, use dormant compute terminology we used, and be prepared if there's a DR so you can activate the data. That's the only time you want to actually activate the data. We also have seen customers do, which is a best practice, by the way, do a DR drill every 3 months and see what happens if a DR even happens, right? We also don't expect, by the way, I want to call this out, we don't also expect a lot of mass exodus of tier one apps to the cloud yet, right? Which means all we're talking about is tier two and tier three. And the ability to consume cloud varies based on you need that. Let's move to the next slide here. We're talking about recovering data in the cloud. So why is this important, right? Remember that snippet we showed you, 90% of operations will run in public cloud. That's why you want to get data into the cloud. I'm going to move to the next one. Disasters do happen, right? We've seen this all the time, right? What do you do when you get that call? Now that you've staged the data successfully, I'm having two examples here. We have other examples as well. One on the left is my hometown that was hit by historic floods in December last year. Then Japan had an earthquake. We have Hurricane Sandy. We have events all the time across the globe. That's what superheroes are for, right? Heroes protect, superheroes prevent. Hopefully, we're talking about protection only, right? So nobody should come to... How many of you don't have a DR plan here? Maybe that's a simple question to ask. I want to see a hand go down. Oh, good. All right. So everybody has a DR plan here, right? So nobody ever says, I don't have a DR plan. But the DR plan itself varies, right? People do sometimes say, I have my tape. I'm going to load it up. But what happens if your entire data center is underwater? Here's an example. We have a customer who had two data centers that were only 5 miles apart with a nuclear facility in between, right? We had another customer who basically still have the data center, on a secondary data center in Bermuda. I don't know what the sea level there is, so you want to think about those kind of things, right? So disasters do happen. Being prepared for that is important. That's the key takeaway here. Let's talk about how do you now unlock the data that you already have in cloud, right? So step one, we got the data. Step two, it's replicated into the cloud. Step three is to activate it, right? You can restore the VM. This is where your format comes in play, right? Your data as encapsulated within VMs, or just data, has been already transported over, but the native format may not be the suitable format of the cloud. Again, recall, selection of tools, that have ability to automate in order for your data and your workload to be portable comes in handy when you really have to recover it. So we recommend doing VM restores, converting into the Azure format if you're going to the Azure cloud or the AWS format, doing some fire drill tests, and getting prepared for it. So have a plan in place. I'll talk about applications online and a DR story a little bit later. That's our superhero mode, if you will. We'll talk about that a bit later. Now, Damien, do you want to give a quick demo of, let's say, you're my hero, which you are, right? If the payroll database, my paycheck is pending, and there is a disaster event, how are you going to get my paycheck come out? Do you want to show it?
Yeah, sure. I'll show you how to do that. Cool. All right. So before we showed you how to get data into the cloud, now it's a case of, all right, now what do I do with it? So let me walk you through it. So this is an example where maybe human resource payroll system's down. I need to recover it. Data center's underwater. I've got nothing to recover it to. Hang on, my data's already in Azure, right? So I can use that. So now the second piece is I attached Azure Storage in the beginning. Now I'm going to actually attach Azure Compute into our main interface here. So we have a tool that gets you all this information that you can just copy and paste and create this connection. Just need to enter a few bits of details, username, password, all that kind of stuff, IDs, and associate a proxy. Now, a proxy is just a server that's going to be doing the work, right? So this is something I actually have up in Azure. My data's there. I need to perform the recovery. I need something in there to facilitate that for me. All right, I connect that up, validates the credentials. You'll see Azure shows up here. So now I have a target to restore to, right? I've got my data. Now I've got a target to restore to. Let's make it happen. So when I'm performing my recovery, I've got my machines that I've protected on-prem. Data's already been shipped over. Now I'm going to initiate the restore. You can see I've got here a collection of groupings, right? So this is a HR payroll group that I protect every day, and I'm going to recover this back into Azure. So on the full virtual machine recovery, I'm going to select Azure as my target, Resource Manager, Support Classic as well. It depends what you guys have deployed. And I can go in and select my virtual machine. All right, when I click Recover, there's a few bits of information I need to put in here. So I can change the name if I want to. I'm just going to keep everything the same. I need to go and select the resource group that I'm recovering into since I'm using ASR. And now I need to select my storage account and my container that I created before. So I'll do that. Also have some granular settings I can choose. We'll automatically size the virtual machine, so we'll detect how big it is, and we'll try and match it up to the appropriate Azure VM size. You can also override some settings with the operating system, change different networks, things like that. Anyway, well, this is a simple case of hitting OK, and I'm automatically now going to pick the data up I have in Azure Blob Storage, and I'm going to start that restore. So to get down into the weeds, it's a bit of a two-step process. So the first step is I need to receive the data I've copied there already, but I need to convert it into an Azure format. So the first thing I do is read all the data. There's some geniuses in our engineering team that have written a CloudFS driver that will convert that real-time back into Blob Storage. Once that conversion's done, step two is to actually create a VM out of that virtual machine disk. So we'll do that. This all happens automatically, all in line. You don't have to worry too much about it. You can see the progress at the top. VM's running and completed. Let's take a look at the proof of life. So I can go into the Azure console and I can search for my virtual machine I just recovered. And there it is running. And now it's a simple case of, hey, let me check out the IP address that's been associated. Let me download the IDP file. Let me connect to it. And you've made some very good friends in HR, which is always handy to have. All right. Am I a superhero yet, or still getting
I need out? To check my bank account, proof of life, so I get my paycheck. But this is good, right? So this is good. So I do see a couple of hands going up. I recognize that you have some questions. But could I request we have the questions a little bit later towards the end so that we can have some continuity? So thank you. So so what Damien showed is a demo of how a selection of tool that natively integrates with the cloud in the event for a disaster and how easy or difficult during the disaster to recover matters a lot. Because you have minutes sometimes, you have hours to respond, definitely not days because of the previously set tier two, tier three workloads getting increased SLA requests. Right, so we give a demo of Azure integration, but assume already that Commvault, because of the wide support we have. We have the similar support for AWS, other clouds out there, right? So you want to have ability to go between clouds and have the native integration capability within there, right? The stuff that we showed on the Azure portal are table stakes. Everybody has to do it. But once you set it up right and have sent a backup there, you can sleep a little bit better, right? Of course, superheroes don't sleep, but you still can sleep a little bit better when you know there's a data in the cloud that you can activate in the event of a disaster, right? Let's talk about what happens when data, once it's gone into the cloud, right? So how many of us, this might be a redundant question, everybody's smart in this room. I keep getting all the hands go up every time I ask a question. So maybe I'll just call this out, right? So cloud in itself does offer redundancy, but it doesn't protect your data natively, right? So we've seen enough instances where customers think that, hey, now that I have my data in the cloud organically provides me an ability to protect the data. They're replicating the same data across regions. So why do I need to protect this data? This is a common question we keep getting asked. Right? Why do I really care? What is the value or the use case you're trying to sell me? So we have this example where the customer was backing up data to the cloud for a long time, before they became our customers, right? Came to us saying, yeah, we have all the data in the cloud. We just need to go, you know, do a quick run through, right? Turned out when they tried to activate some of the data, their backups had corrupted a while back. They didn't know that. The corrupted replicated backup 6 times over across the world is still a corrupted replicated backup once, right? So we've seen cases where protection is not same as storage. So what you need is to also protect the data. I'll skip this infographic here, right? I'm going to switch to an example. This is a real email example. This is from AWS. I'm not picking on AWS. Love Amazon, love Azure, right? But example, right? AWS themselves send this saying, hey, your data is corrupt, so we recommend that you go back to your backup and spin it back up. And this is the recommendation from the cloud provider itself. So once you have achieved the first 2 steps of sending data, being able to DR, or being able to recover, you also want to start protecting your data so that you have an ability to recover even in the instance of corrupt data. All right, next question obviously, right? What should I be protecting? Remember, this session is agnostic. Right? We're talking about what are the things you need to keep in mind. You really want to be protecting based on your SLA, based on your critical workloads. You want to be protecting VSA. For example, if you're going to be protecting a VM that has the data, you protect the entire workload. But keep in mind, it needs to be a stateful workload or a stateless workload. Your decision to how we protect it will change, right? You also want to think about, do I have to protect my disks or do I have to protect my backup for archive purpose? That is a different question, will lead to a different answer. So have a playbook ready in place. Once you categorize your data, once you have your SLAs in place, once you match that up with the provider of your choice and the tool of your choice, next comes, what should I be protecting and when I should be protecting, right? Also, think about agent and guest option, right? So we've had some interesting competition in the space, right? Not going to name them, but agents were a no-no for a long time, and then suddenly agents are a yes. Commvault has been doing agents for a while now. We understand the importance of having a multiple strategies to handling your data. So think about integrated cloud image protection. Think about agent and guest. Database as a service, another thing, right? We keep hearing from customers, hey, my cloud provider gives me the ability to run my database. They take care of replicating it. Why do we need to protect it? Same story. You want to protect it because corruption can happen, right? And Commvault, again, companies like Commvault have native cloud snapshot protection as well. Think of using those as well as part of your strategy. I'm going to skip this slide, actually. You get the point, though, right? Multi-cloud strategy is important. Pick the right tool. All right. Keeping up with our superhero slash alien concept, right? Azure is like a mother cloud. Think of that, right? You want to have tools that natively dock easy. Otherwise, you are now scrolling through a bunch of pages trying to get your workload up when you have a disaster. You want something that natively clicks and runs, like just how Damien demonstrated. Also, think about classic and ARM support when it comes to Azure, because Azure continues to evolve. The amount of technology that they keep delivering every 3 months is just incredible, right? Like every cloud provider. So you want to have continuous integration into providers, and you want to think about Azure Stack. You want to think about so many things. So you want to think about tools and policies that continue to keep evolving based on the new technology that becomes available to you. All right. I'm I'm going to skip this slide again because we just spoke about database as a service. Time for a demo. Remember, I want to recollect this, right? We said four things: getting data to the cloud, recovering in the event of a disaster, protecting that data because it matters, and then we'll also talk about a DR situation. So now we're going to talk about how you protect the data in the cloud, and Damien has a quick 5-minute demo on that as well. And this is, again, the payroll database you can protect.
Absolutely.
Thank
you. This one I prepared earlier. So
I want next month's paycheck as well, so please protect it.
So you saw me recover a workload into Azure, but the business requirements don't really change, right? I still need to protect it once it's there. So we can absolutely do that completely agentlessly with Azure and some other cloud providers as well. So here I'm giving you a demonstration of what we need to do to do that. So I have a what we call a subclient, which is a grouping of virtual machines again. This is natively hooked into Azure, so I can browse my inventory and my virtual machine. So I can expand the sales corp resource group, and I can see that payroll web machine that I restored earlier. Click OK. I need to assign a policy, right? I need to say, again, how long I need to protect it for, how many copies I want to make. Maybe I want to copy the data now to a different cloud provider. Absolutely all possible. So I'll select my policy I need to associate to this workload in particular. All right, click OK there, and simple case of, right, I just need to run the backup now. I already connected to Azure in my previous instance to do the recovery. It's already set up, so now I can start backing up virtual machines agentlessly there as well. So this is what we're doing. We have a collection of virtual machines. In this case, I've just picked one, but I can grab that, put it to a media agent I have running in the cloud, send it to blob storage, or I can send it to another cloud provider. It's completely deduplicated, so I don't have to worry about storage costs there. And one of the things we recently did add since I recorded this video was change block tracking, right? It sounds like that's an on-prem thing. No, we've actually added it for Azure as well. So we have change block tracking, which accelerates your incremental backups dramatically. Superhero yet?
Not yet. Thank you, Hiro, though, right? So what Damien showed us is the continuity, right? Which is you want to move your data, be able to recover in terms of disaster, again, protect it so that continuously you can lend the same level of confidence back to your teams that the data in the cloud is protected. Of course, the operations I called out previously, which is once in a while you want to spin it up, make sure things are working, and keep your backup updated. Now that you keep constantly sending backup, possibly an incremental backup, you want to also have an operation that says every quarter you do a fire drill and see what's happening and can I bring it up. Right. So getting closer to heroes becoming superheroes, right? Because that's where greatness is. Yeah. We're going to talk about a real world use case. And I have to talk about my superhero example, right? Even Superman has kryptonite, right? Yeah, issues, right? Cloud is a superpower, but it has its own pitfalls. So we're going to, instead of going and talking about a bunch of stuff here, I'm going to show you how at a customer site, a global fashion retailer that is a fantastic customer of Commvault, how a backup admin like us here, right, became a superhero by adopting some of the principles that we outlined. That is not going to be a demo of that particular case because I can't show the customer environment. We'll have an equivalent demo that for Commvault Damien has put together. So we're talking about how do you get from mission status, mostly backup complete, I mostly hit my SLAs, to, yep, I'm now hitting my SLAs, I'm ready, to, yeah, booyah status, which is, yep, bring it on kind of situation, right? So here's an example. The problem is this. This is a global fashion retailer. Their original DR solution was to work with a provider that said, yep, we will help you recover your data in the event of a disaster, you will get in line. Basically, what they bought was for paying about $80,000 a month, right? They were getting a right to get in line in the event of a disaster. If you are a disaster recovery provider, you really have a lot of people waiting in line for you to provide, right? So they got a right to get DR for their solution. That still did not meet their critical DR needs. They had a 48-hour RTO. This was their situation before. The after, because a superhero stepped in, or a hero rise, or it was like hero was rising up to a superhero status, the status changed a lot, right? So they used drive shipping, like we previously told, import-export to Azure, right? They seeded the data into the cloud. They implemented DR solutions that we outlined. And basically, they used the secret weapon. I'm not going to name it, and the superheroes won, right? Ta-da, booyah, right? The result is phenomenal, right? This is one of the poster child results. They dropped their $960K annual subscription to DR to $75,000. They achieved 4-hour RPO RTO, in some cases less. This is for both physical and virtual. I have to emphasize a physical keyword because how many of you run only in a purely virtual mode here? Thought so, right? So you want to have a solution that does this both physical and virtual. So they achieved 4-hour RTO and RPO window down from 48 hours, and some cases even less than 4 hours. And they only spin up the resources only when they need it. Remember the dormant compute situation we spoke about? So the mission status, what do you guess? Any guesses? Yep. Right. So this is the architecture. I probably won't go into detail of this. This was their journey, going from working with a single DR provider who gave them a right to get in line for about $960,000 a year to what you saw as results. And they used multiple data centers, all architected on Azure, and Commvault helping them. And this is their current global story. Their footprint is across continents. They're DR ready. And next time an event happens, touch wood, it doesn't. But if it happens, they won't even blink an eye. That's the situation of this global fashion retailer that we helped with. Let's talk about a demo. And now, Damien, prove to me that you can learn and become my superhero.
No pressure there or anything. All right, so we haven't shown this to anyone before. This is new capabilities that we're adding to the product. It's not available to everyone yet. It's kind of in a tech preview mode, so we have some customers trying it out. And essentially what it is replication to Azure and the other cloud that starts with an A. So let's run through it. All right, so I already have my virtual machines that I've protected on-prem. Now what I want to do is enable replication. So I'm already shifting data to the cloud. I have that running automatically in the background. So every time I perform a new backup operation, the data gets captured on-prem, gets shipped to Azure, and it's available there. So I'm going to configure what we call Live Sync here towards Azure Resource Manager. And the first step I need to do is choose the machines that I want to replicate. In this case, I've got a tier 2 CRM app that my company uses. It consists of a website and a database, and I'm going to shift them over. There's not too much you actually have to configure here, right? So I just have to do the same options that I did for a regular restore. So I need to go and choose my storage account. I need to go choose the container. I'm going to choose to restore a disk there. I'm going to choose the same for the other option. But you can restore it sort of out of place, or you can change the name or different locations or whatever you feel is necessary to support your DR. Now, the second thing I need to do is configure the copy. I can either replicate this directly, right? But I'm not getting any advantage of Commvault's deduplication, right? Because we dedupe to cloud, we only send unique blocks, compressed, encrypted. So I'm going to choose copy number 2, which is my cloud copy. After that, I need to select when this replication is actually going to run. And I can choose to say, hey, every time you capture new data, kick off the replication. So I'm going to choose that option. You can also choose and say, hey, you know, for this workload, maybe I only need to run the replication once a week, once a day. But in this case, every time I have new data to replicate, go ahead and do that. All right, so I click the OK button. And my job will automatically start off figuring out that I've got some stuff to replicate. And we'll recap on what we're doing here. So I'm taking machines that I've protected on my on-prem hypervisor, plugged it into that framework I showed you before of moving data. So I've got my policies all in line. I've got automatic copy, fully deduplicated data going to Azure Cloud. And I end up with the VM on the other side as well. So if we dive a little bit deeper here, you can see that I have a media agent, which stores my data. It's fully deduplicated. Store it on any storage target you want. Send it over to Azure Blob Storage. Once it's there, we do that same process where we do the conversion, right? Because we have to do an inline conversion, convert it to an Azure format. Plus, we have some extra smarts in here to apply incremental changes, because that's not really an easy thing to do, right, in the cloud concept. So we apply those incremental changes, and once that's done, we automatically provision a virtual machine from it. All right, so its first replication job's complete. If I now need to go and have a look at how that's going, I can open up the replication monitor. I can see that everything's in sync. So when a disaster happens, we're kind of good to go.
Yeah, thanks, Damien. So what we displayed there, what it showed there is early TP2 kind of release, as you know. But the answer is you want to have a continuous story, right? You want to have a continuous story, not just protection once. And you want to have a life sync equivalent story here when you're thinking about having the ability of a superhero. Because even if you get a call at 3 a.m. for a disaster event, it still would take a couple of hours if you're not prepared, even with the backup in the Azure. But when you have live sync in progress, all you do is assign your policy, assuming you've done the homework of classifying your workloads, picking your SLAs, picking your priorities, and attaching your policies. Live sync capability will automatically take care of keeping your backup in sync with the cloud. So you wake up, push a couple of buttons, go back to sleep, or fly away, or whatever you think you do in your superhero time, right? So that's the idea here. In summary, right? Sort of like Avengers Assemble kind of summary, right? Understand the challenges, evaluate solutions, avoid pitfalls by knowing them, have a plan in place to work with tools that are cross-platform and works across physical and virtual workloads, natively integrates with cloud providers, understands your Microsoft workloads, understands your Linux needs, and have a framework in place that basically takes your cloud journey in the most safest way. Because risk is everywhere, right? You try to provide a solution to your CIO. On one hand, you're trying to cut back on risks, but the cloud journey itself is risky. So it's you're in a tough spot of providing less risk, but you want to do that in the most optimal way. So think about DR on demand, because we've seen sticker shocks that are unreal. Right? We've seen bills where people thought, hey, I was thinking I'm only backing so much data, but my policy was never reviewed. Now I'm sending so much data that's not deduped. Sticker shock. So only think about spinning up data that you need. Think about pay-as-you-consume model, because cloud is great for that, particularly for tier 2, tier 3 workloads. And think about workflow automation and the processes. So with that, I'm going to have to call saying, now we have protected our data, we've leveraged the cloud, we have some secret weapons, and we know when there is a mission, we're going to say booyah, right? We'll go into questions now. We do have about 20 minutes, so we also have one more thing that's pending. We have an Xbox One to give away for a superhero here who's going to be luckier, right? So you should have a raffle ticket. We'll do that at the end of the question and answer session. So feel free to ask us questions, and we will try and answer your best as possible. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that,
repeat the question.
Yeah, so the question was, is there a way to sort of move a group of machines or group of applications, right? If I have an entire site down, I don't want to have to recover machines one by one. So with the new LifeSync framework, that will give you that capability. You can kind of configure it ahead of time, and then you can fail over later on. So in the early tech preview, we do the data movement. What's coming later on is the ability to orchestrate the failover and have that grouping mechanism where I can say, hey, this is my application. This is the thing I need right now. Perform the failover for me. Here's the steps I need to do to get it up and running. And yeah, that'll be coming out soon.
Yeah, that'll be coming up soon. And that's key, right? You know, you don't only fail over a particular VM. You're talking about an application construct. You're talking about a group of VMs coming together to light up a particular service. You want network mapping. You want a particular set of services coming online at different orders. So all of that is part of the orchestration capability, right? That's part of what Commvault is coming up with. LifeSync is here, and you should expect those grouping constructs very soon. Yeah. And that's an important question to keep in mind, because otherwise you're doing your custom scripting and other things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can let me repeat the question. So basically, can Commvault become high available, right? And be available to run in Azure, right? If my data center's down, that's probably going to take down my Commvault infrastructure as well. The answer is yes. We have a whole bunch of options to allow high availability of our infrastructure servers. So if that happens, it's easy to get something running in an active-passive fashion, boot it up in Azure, and start your recoveries.
Right. Commvault does replicate the essential metadata already. So if you want to spin up Commvault itself in Azure, that's possible. But again, keep that dormant compute in mind. Commode itself should be a dormant compute for you when you really only you spin up only when you need to.
Cool.
Any more questions? That's one. I think everybody heard the question loud and clear. Like, what if Azure completely goes down, right? So I worked for Microsoft for years, and I launched Azure data centers before I moved on to Commvault. I hope it doesn't happen, right? That said, hope is not a strategy, right? So we have seen Azure outages, right? We have seen the DNS outage recently, 2 weeks back. It's a massive outage, right? So what if Azure completely goes down? It depends on what you've bet on, right? If you're on-prem and you're using cloud as a possible backup, now you're talking about multi-point failure coordinatedly happening, right? That's larger than life event in some way, right? So that's why we say, hey, when you have a critical workload that needs to go into cloud, have more than one strategy. You're likely also having your on-prem workloads. You're already backing up to tape, but backing up with less frequency, right? You have multiple strategies to employ there. If Azure itself goes down, unless you've architected a solution so that it also has an Amazon on another cloud, then you're probably defaulting back to your private cloud, but that said, like you said, having launched Azure regions, I hope that doesn't happen. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'll take that one. So as part of protecting a VM, we'll automatically capture the application in a good state, so we do everything we can to make sure it's application consistent. We also have additional integration with those applications, so we can recover individual items and objects. So if you wanted to, let's say, have a live sync system running, but you know, you're doing transactional backups every 10 minutes, you also have the ability to restore that application data back and keep that. It's one strategy, so we'll give you a whole bunch of different options, but that may be something that would work. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of why we, you know, mentioned tier 2, tier 3 workloads. Yep.
Cool. Any further questions? Oh, great question. So how does one justify using Commvault or companies like Commvault as opposed to Azure backup or backup operations or services provided natively by the cloud provider? Goes back to the heterogeneous environment we talk about, right? So as much as cloud providers or platform vendors provide capabilities, they typically are lighting those capabilities for their workloads, right? So Commvault or companies like Commvault, what we think about is we are agnostic, right? We work across the clouds. Your inline transformation between the clouds is important. Getting data into cloud to Azure might be the best bet when you use some of the Azure technologies. Try getting data out from that format. Try spinning up a VM that was in an Azure VM and taking that to Amazon EC2. The another provider might offer it. Now we are doing multi-point steps. So having a platform company that looks at all other vendors in an agnostic way is a great investment for you to think about all the cloud scenarios we spoke about, right? So you want to have agnosticism in it. You want to have ability to not depend on one particular provider to lock up your data. That'll be your strategy if you want to have multi-cloud. Again, this is a great question because we work with a lot of Fortune 500 companies, right? Most of them, actually. There is very few companies who say we bet on only one cloud. How many of you here have your own organizations using more than one cloud? Right? There's enough that's happening. There is this IT departments that spin up their workloads in a particular cloud of choice because of dev test operations. We see another department doing production workloads in another cloud. Now you are a backup admin sitting there saying, which tool I pick up and learn? Probably all of them. So that's a great bet to think about one agnostic provider that works across clouds. Did I answer your question? All right, thanks. Yeah.
Yes.
So the question is, in the live sync product, is test DR capability available? Absolutely. You want to talk about
details? Yeah, so, So yeah, with the tech preview functionality, we don't have that yet for cloud, but it obviously, I mean, that's all part of a DR solution, right? So it's something we're building on. For on-prem now, we do have some capabilities there, and you can expect that to be extended out quite a bit.
Yes.
So some options we will give you when this launches, so you'll be able to choose. You can say, hey, my data is replicated there, it's ready to go, but I'm not actually going to create the VM from it just yet. So maybe I should do that when the failover happens, right? So I'm not paying for the compute. Azure can run in a deallocated state, so you can save a bit of money there. But yeah, great question. That's something you definitely have to consider, right? If I have a workload running up there waiting for DR, that's an extra cost. And to get the most out of cloud, it's you have to be opportunistic. When to activate those workloads. Great question.
Yeah. So you want to employ all the strategies, right? If your tier two workload becomes more and more important, gets closer to tier one, then there's likely a little bit more budget to spend on it. So having an active workload in Azure may warrant that scenario. But in cases where that doesn't warrant, you still want to employ the dormant compute strategy. Right? Okay, cool. Any other questions? All right, we have a couple of hands there. Sorry, if we can't hear you, could you be a little bit louder? So the question is, how do you deal with a 4 terabyte SQL Server database when you try to move into Azure? You want to take on?
There's a few people nodding their heads and going, yeah, that's a bit hard to do. To be honest, I don't know the technical limitations about what we do with LiveSync. If you come see us at the booth, I can probably talk to one of our developers and we can find that out.
Yeah. Okay. The VM VHD file size.
Block storage.
No, yes and no, right? It depends. If you have a 4 terabyte, SQL Server, most likely it's edging closer to a tier one workload. So that's one of the things we don't head on handle today, as in when I say we, the industry in some way, right? The industry looks at tier one workloads slightly differently than tier two and tier three workloads. Yeah, of course, we'll be happy to talk about some of the roadmap items that is in play that I'm not yet allowed to talk. Maybe if you stop by the booth, we can have more in-depth conversation on some of the specific workload scenarios.
I think the other point there is we give you some options, right? So maybe LiveSync doesn't really fit that use case. But the cool thing is that since we have all these other options of how to move data, you can employ one of those other things. Yeah, maybe it's not ideal, right? But having options is really important. If I have a point solution that can only replicate at a VM level, I'm in a bit of trouble, right? So yeah, something to consider.
Cool. Any other questions? By the way, great set of questions. Great question. What kind of RPO can we choose with LiveSync? Again, it varies. It depends on the workload, depends on how we configure it. You want to talk any specifics yet about that?
We probably don't have specific numbers here, but with the LiveSync technology, it really depends on how frequently you can protect that workload, because that determines our RPO. In a lot of cases, since we were protecting machines at a VM level, maybe that don't work well with snaps, maybe the application doesn't function very well trying to engage VSS or something like that. So there's a lot of variables there in order to do that. But we're still sort of working out the numbers that we can get down to.
Right. And our experience is that it's like a dial, right? You know, if you want a higher RPO, then you're also taking an impact on your workloads. You're sending a lot more data that you're not used to sending over the wire if it's live sync. So it really depends on which methodology you employ. For smaller workloads, it's conceivable that you will be able to get RPO that's sub 1 hour. And if it's depending on the last sync, you might be able to spin it up sooner, right? But for the most workloads, again, keep in mind that this is technology preview of live sync. Some of the benchmarks we've seen is for most workloads that are tier 2, tier 3, you can achieve highly competitive RPOs, right? And from that point, it becomes what is your organization's unique aggressive strategy or passive strategy employ to get a higher RPO. Cool. Any other questions?
So,
You want to repeat the question?
Sure. So the question was, how do I perform tests if, basically, it sounds like, how do I sandbox the network, right? Because I'm already running stuff on-prem, and now I want to test in cloud and things like that. So we have some solutions coming there right now. It would be a case of, hey, I'm going to provision it on a restricted network. I can use some of the Azure functions to control the network access outbound. We have some cool things coming in that regard.
Right. Any other questions? Great. By the way, awesome audience. Great questions. We thank you for coming out today. We, fellow superheroes or heroes, we appreciate you giving us feedback and sending us questions. Please do take a quick scan and send us your feedback. We'll much appreciate it.